You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com, your everything resource for the security industry.
This is episode 15 from SIW Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Cole. On this program today, we have a couple of neat things coming your way. First off, we have an interview with Julia Webb, Executive Vice President over at VoiceVault. VoiceVault is a voice biometrics firm, and along with the firm Contact Babble, which is in the call center industry, they did a study, and they found that about $11.7 billion in more than 11,000 years of contact center agents' time was spent checking callers' identities in 2007. So I guess this is already data for the year that's already that's a projection for how much will be spent. So we got on the phone, voice biometrics, obviously a hot technology coming out, and we asked Julia to tell us a little bit about voice biometrics. One of the things that grabbed me is this is a technology that was started back in the 1980s really to track felons who are out on parole, and they were used to call in and verify, you know, who they were and where they were. Of course, you know, very similar to the early days of other biometrics coming out of the law enforcement community. We went ahead and asked Julia really what had been happening in voice biometrics, and apparently this stuff has been under testing for quite some time, and it's really net just now to come to market. Without further ado, here's Julia's comments on where voice biometrics are today.
Over the years, with the experience that VoiceVault and other companies have had in voice biometrics, which has significantly improved the performance of the technology, and specifically in cross-channel performance. With voice verification, it's extremely important for a successful application to be able to work across a landline, voice over IP, mobile phone. And that was one of the hurdles in the early days, was to get that improved performance across channel.
Okay.
So that has happened now after many years of R&D. In addition to the overall accuracy rates of voice verification now coming in line with other types of biometrics such as fingerprint technology and facial recognition.
Okay. Now, does it work in terms of the verification like a lot of these systems, and you know, played around with facial recognition and fingerprints? Is usually there's a percentage map that you can control to say, okay, if it meets, you know, if it's within this percentage of likelihood, then go ahead and match it. Is that the same way on voice biometrics?
Exactly. Just like any other biometric system, you're going to be able to tune the threshold, the security threshold for any particular application. So you look at two things. One is, you know, how am I going to be able to tune this particular biometric for, you know, whether it's I'm going to set a certain threshold if I'm transferring $10,000, and that's going to, I'm going to increase the threshold if the transaction value is over $100,000.
In terms of how a customer, if it was used in a phone-based environment, would use a system like this, are they asked a standard question that it already has a pre-recorded response on, or does it match to any random phrase or word?
We can do both. I can give you a couple examples. With ABN AMRO in the Netherlands, they are rolling out voice verification to all of their customers. In their environment, they're doing two things. The individual is asked to speak their account number, and then subsequent to that, they're asked to speak answer to a secret question. So it's not a secret question, but a personal question. So where's my favorite vacation spot? And then I hear myself asking myself the question when I'm calling into the bank, and then I answer New Zealand, and it verifies that I'm giving the correct answer as well as my voice print matching. Another scenario, we work with Progressive Insurance in the U.S., and you know, they have a number of ways of utilizing voice verification, but in one instance, it's a random phrases that are spoken. So during the enrollment process, you may be asked to speak yellow dog, green French fry, a whole bunch of sets of random words, and then upon verification, you're asked to speak something completely different, you know, black telephone, brown pizza, whatever it is.
Sure.
And then it verifies your voice. So in that instance, it's kind of the optimum solution if you're concerned about any playback attempts on the system.
Gotcha. Tell me about playback attempts, because that seems to be the what me would think would be an obvious weakness of this. Unless you go to that system, can someone sort of defeat it with a playback, and do you just let that go? Is that just a different security level?
We've done a lot of testing both internally and then through our partners, through their different trial programs on voice recordings, and generally the system is very difficult to defeat with voice, just a standard voice recording. Now, if you have enough time and money, then you can beat any biometric system out there, or frankly, any security system. But it's about how much time and money you're willing to spend. So kind of cost benefit on that attack on the system. If you're concerned about those types of attempts, especially a sophisticated playback attempt, then you would look for either a challenge response scenario, which is what we deploy with many financial institutions. So in that case, it's all numeric. You enroll four sets of random digits. You speak 3, 2, 5, 6, 8, 9, 7, 4. When you're asked to verify, say, please say 1, 2, please say 5, 8, please say 6, 3, please say 7, 4. So it's completely different from what you enrolled. And every time you call in to verify, those digits change. So somebody would have to be following you around for an extended period of time to get all of the potential combinations of those digits before they could do a playback attempt. Or you could use random phrases, as I mentioned earlier.
Okay. Obviously, it sounds like the number one sort of market for this would be phone systems. Have you guys tested out in terms of using the system for facility access?
That hasn't been an area that the company's looked at to date for any deployments, not to say that we wouldn't down the road.
Sure, sure. Obviously, there's a lot of solutions already there, and it's can be a tough market. What other areas have you guys looked at taking this type of biometric application to?
Well, the main area, as you mentioned, we've got call centers, probably number one application right now, especially with the mandate from the FFIEC in the U.S. for stronger authentication for both online and telephone banking. So that's obviously, in particular within the U.S., what's driving a lot of the requests from the large banks to the voice verification vendors for them to come in with a solution. Second to that is actually password reset services. For Fortune 500 organizations, spend a lot of money with all of their employees calling into the help desk to reset their passwords. And voice verification along with an IVR system can fully automate that password reset service and save the organization quite a bit of money. We are also seeing applications with online banking, so a company called VoicePay over in Europe, they're just rolling out our engine. A similar scenario to PayPal, you set up an account online, you register. In this case, you're actually associating it with a number of credit cards. When you go to make an online transaction, you actually, instead of having to enter your credit card information again, you enter a telephone number to be called at. You're called, and your voice is verified, and then that online transaction is completed.
Quite amazing. Quite amazing. So what's the potential growth in this area?
It's obviously it's significant, especially with the FFIEC mandate right now. It's a huge increase in just voice verification technology deployments within the U.S. in particular, within the banks. I think it's definitely one of the fastest growing areas in biometrics, at least from what I've seen, having worked in the industry for the last 12 years.
So again, big thanks to Julia Webb over at Voice Vault for sharing a little information about voice biometrics and where that technology is developing. Obviously not a whole lot of grab right now in terms of traditional physical security access control, But as we know, security doesn't stop at the doors, and this is another tool you can use to layer. Speaking of security, we also have with us today Bob Hayes and Lynn Matice, and they are going to talk a little bit about security leadership and a program that's coming up in August out in San Jose, California, namely the GSO 2010 event. Security Technology and Design is a presenting sponsor, and this is a very select event for security leaders to talk about convergence, security metrics, and really how to lead the security department of the future, hence the 2010 rather than 2007. The idea, according to planner Ray Bernard, that these are things you should be doing already if you want to be ready for security in 2010. We're here with Lynn Matice, Vice President and Chief Security Officer for Boston Scientific, as well as Bob Hayes, CSO of CXO Media, and Executive Director of the Security Executive Council. And we're here to talk about GSO 2010, an event coming up in late August out in San Jose, California. We talked a little bit about this program on our last podcast, and you can get more information at gsoevent.com. But the day one of this program is a security leadership workshop. And Bob, I wanted to ask you, why is it a security leadership workshop as opposed to a security management workshop?
Jeff, I think the main reason is that security management more commonly refers to what executives of a corporation or of an agency expect of security, the services and the baseline support that they're aware of and that they expect the security management people to provide. Security leadership, on the other hand, I think goes more towards leading the security organization with the business, leading the business as well, to where you're providing security services that add business value. And that means that you have to understand the business and the solution, the business risks and the solutions around security so well that you can apply them in a way that they add value to the company, to where security is more than just a reactive service, but it's literally enables the business to do a better job. Technology can play a huge part in that, and that's really what this workshop's striving to demonstrate.
Now, I notice on the website it talks that metrics are part of this workshop. Lynn, what do metrics in your experience as CSO for Boston Scientific have to do with security leadership?
Well, Jeff, metrics are a critical element of any security executive's position, just as they would in any other leadership role within the company. One of the key factors that you're trying to accomplish with your measurements and your metrics is to be able to explain to the senior leadership the things that corporate security does that impact the corporation and reduces losses, reduces impact, reduces the probability of issues taking place, and what the outcomes of those are, because you're discussing outcomes with metrics. You're talking about the things that have been accomplished and how they relate to the business and how they impact the business. And most of your metrics should be designed around understanding what the goals and needs of the business are and be able to communicate those metrics back to the business in a manner that shows how the corporate security organization is focused at the same goalpost and operating in a manner that allows you to positively impact the outcome of the company.
So on that, I think what we're saying is that maybe there's a little bit of a difference between metrics, as you're thinking of them, and perhaps the metrics that, or quote, metrics that most security directors tend to keep, such as maybe number of alarms, number of suspicious activities reported. I mean, what's the difference, basically?
Well, one is about activity. Okay, if you're taking statistical data on your activity, how many alarms you've received, or how many incident reports you've received, or what's the total dollar value of losses that you've experienced as a company. Those are interesting anecdotal statistics, but they don't tell the story about what you're doing to manage your function and to be able to respond to the needs of the organization and positively impact the outcome for the company. you know, when you talk about losses, you should be communicating them in a manner that are understandable to the organization in what you're doing to mitigate those losses more than what the actual losses are. And that's a critical factor. You know, take a measurement on efforts under CTPAT, for instance, where a lot of organizations are doing export from other countries and pulling them into this country. And as a result of CTPAT, you're speeding the process of getting your goods to the workplace and to the marketplace. And that's extremely quantifiable on what impact you're having on the marketability of your products and the time and cost it takes to get your products delivered to the market. Those are very important metrics that are very, very closely managed and watched by the management team of the company. And when the security organization can show the positive impact that they're having on reducing the time it takes to get product to market, that equates back to dollars to the corporation.
Bob, on that same note, in terms of metrics and influence, you mentioned influence as part of the security leadership workshop. What is there to have influence about as a CSO?
I think the status that security's been operating at for maybe the last 7 to 10 years is that security has become influential when it is speaking around the security risks that can have business impact. For example, workplace violence, theft, product contamination, those are the kinds of issues that management thinks of when they think of security. Security's had influence around that for some time, but there's another whole type of risk where these metrics and where progressive security leaders can show that they add this value to the business. So if we have the security risks that impact business, on the other side, we have the business issues, what the business is doing, what's critical to the business, that has security issues attached with it. Now, what do I mean by that? For example, if we were going to be expanding the services of our company into what would be considered an underdeveloped nation, and we were expecting to go in there and pretty much operate the same way that we do in a more developed nation, let's say maybe in Europe versus parts of Africa or the Middle East. That's a great business plan to expand there internationally, but have we taken into account all the security issues around that business plan and the costs associated with them, that we're going to have a different kind of contractor and employee screening processes, that we're going to have different services on the ground to take care of our people in that country. So what we're talking about is helping management understand the role that security can play on positively impacting the business, but in order to do that, the security person has to be seen as a business leader that adds value to the corporation. So what we're really looking for is to where these people are expected to deliver security services, but respected as business people and able to apply their trade in a way that positively enhances the way the company does business.
Lynn, let's connect the two dots. Do metrics help you expand your security influence over there at Boston Scientific?
Well, absolutely. As an example of that would be if you take a look at risk profiling for your facilities and you create measurements and metrics around the risk profiling for your facilities that are located around the world, a facility organization likes to look at things very, very finitely, and they want to know, what does it cost them per square foot to operate that particular facility? And then they like to equate that then across all of the facilities and say, you know, you should only be costing X amount per square foot at any one of these facilities, and if you go above that, then you've got to go into extensive explanation of why you need to do that. well, you know, that can work great for how much electricity you use or how much air conditioning or heating that you use at a given site. Of course, you have to take into account for those things the geographical location that you operate in, because you're going to obviously do a lot more heating in New England than you're going to do down in Atlanta. But at the same time, when you take a look at it from a security perspective, you take a measurement of what the risk profile is for that facility, and you can equate out what your costs of security are going to be based on your risk profiling and the metrics that you've got around your risk profiling. If you're in the middle of a very, very high crime area that has a lot of hazardous activities all the way around that facility, and you don't have the ability to safeguard the thing properly, then you're going to have a much more significant loss factor. Depending upon the workforce that you're going to be bringing into that organization, you're going to have another quotient that's going to be associated with that. One of the things I always like to use dealing with background investigations and things of that nature is the Bureau of Statistics of the Department of Justice puts out some statistics that's, you know, on average, and they vary it by different locales around the country, but on average around the country, you've got 1 to 3% of the population in this country that they identify as having what they call criminal intent. The perplexity to go out and create some kind of criminal activity should the opportunity arise for them. It doesn't mean that they automatically will. Now, if you equate that back to our individual facilities, you're sitting in a situation where you're hiring from the population, the general population base around that facility and that locale, so you can equate that back to the probability that you're going to have 1 to 3% of your workforce that is going to have criminal intent. That's very easily quantifiable to the folks, and they understand then what some of their risk quotient is going to be.
And I guess that's part of the whole move of getting security out of the basement, away from the just monitoring the cameras and up into a C-level position. It's, you know, very important to understand these concepts. Again, big thanks to Bob Hayes and Lynn Matthijs. More of these concepts, including things like how to talk to management about technology and how to understand how to relate security to business drivers, will be covered at the GSO 2010 event. This is coming up August 22nd and 23rd at the campus of Adobe out in San Jose, California. For more information, again, gsoevent.com. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
And that's a wrap for episode 15 of SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com for Monday, July 30th, 2007. If you would like to share any comments on this week's podcast, send them to podcast@securityinfowatch.com or go ahead and use the comments tab that's located right there on our page at securityinfowatch.com/podcast. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe your comments will be featured on next week's program.